Hi folks, it's John here. Right, the topic for this talk is transitions. It's maybe a bit of a technical term, but it means changing from one state of being into another. There's been a lot of talk of transition out of lockdown, but that's not the sort of transition that I want to talk about today. The easiest way I can picture transitions is if I imagine putting a pan on the stove, turning on the heat, and then dropping some ice cubes into it. Those ice cubes will go through two transitions. First, when they melt from ice to water, that's a transition from solid to liquid. Then, as the effect of the heat continues, the water then boils into steam. That's a second transition from liquid to gas. All well and good, and maybe even vaguely interesting, but ice going to water and water going to gas isn't really what we need to concentrate on, unless you're sitting there desperate for a cup of tea. There are two transitions that really do matter to us, and it's those two that I want to talk about today. These two big transitions have life-changing implications for us all, more than just wanting a cup of tea. The two transitions that I mean are Adam and Eve, when they transitioned out of the Garden of Eden, and every Christian when they transitioned to heaven. So, the first transition was when mankind transitioned out of Eden into this fallen world at the beginning of time. Then the second transition is when each of us transitions from this world into heaven, either when we die or when Jesus comes back. So instead of ice to water, then water to steam, let's think of it as Eden to life on earth, and then life on earth to eternal life in heaven. Two transitions. So when we think of Eden and when we think of heaven, the images that we're given are quite different, but there's one huge similarity. It's all about us being at one with God. Sometimes I think we need to concentrate more on the opening of the Bible, the book of Genesis. We can often get sidetracked when we're talking about Genesis into the idea of creation, and that can then take us down this rat hole of creation versus evolution, and it distracts us from this most important bit of the story. Let me suggest the most important bit is the first four words, even before creation is mentioned. In the beginning, God. Let's think on that. God is the source of everything. God should be the focus of everything we think and feel. God is fundamental, at the foundation of everything that we are and everything that we can be. God deserves our attention because He is. God's existence is at the core of life. Let's recognize that and build everything from that basis. So, the story of the Garden of Eden sets this scene of man's relationship with God. And the picture it paints is wonderful. The word paradise is often overused, but this really is what it means. The Bible doesn't tell us that much about life in the garden, but what we do know is it was perfection. God and mankind living in unity in some form of wonderful harmony. As it says, it was very good. So the first state before the first transition was the perfection of the garden. And the final state, as shown in the Bible, is that of mankind. Well, that part of mankind which is the people of God, again being united with God in heaven. Heaven and Eden are shown differently. But that idea of the perfection of us being fully united with God is at the heart of both Eden and heaven. So, the state that we're now in, this life in a fallen and corrupt world, is an intermediate state, an in-between state. That means our life in this earth is just a temporary passing phase. Let's live with that context at the heart of everything we do, recognising that we are just passing through this life. That can have a big impact on how we live day to day. So, transition is a state, a change of state from one state to another. As an illustration of this sort of thing, let's think of photography. And here I'm talking about photography before it became digital, and you'll see why I'm thinking in those terms. Way back in 1839, a Frenchman by the name of Louis Daguerre perfected a way of capturing what we now call a photograph. Although the process changed a bit, it remained pretty similar for the next century and a half. And that process involved two transitions. Firstly, the image was captured in a camera, maybe just a box with a hole in the front. That image was captured on something like a glass plate or a film, and it was a negative image. What that meant was that the light bits in the original scene were dark, and the dark original areas were light. And of course, we're only thinking of black and white here. So the first transition, the first change of state, was from original image to negative film. The next transition was when a negative film was put through a similar process of exposure to light and produced a positive image on paper. And many of our grannies or great-grannies have treasured little photos, grainy, sometimes not very good quality, but images of our ancestors. So, the first transition produced a negative, then the second transition turned that back into a positive image. The photographic process was of quite some fascination to me as a youngster, and I spent quite a bit of my teenage years and early 20s messing with photography in one way or another, including having a dark room, doing my own processing. So the two transitions of positive original to negative film, then negative film to positive paper image, was one that I spent a lot of time working with. That intermediate stage where you've got the negative, but it's not been turned into a positive, is a tricky one. I take quite a lot of photos and process the film, and then I'd need to be able to pick which negatives were worth the cost, the time, the effort to print onto paper. So I'd have a lot of negatives and I'd need to decide which ones were any good. But it's hard to see the true picture when all you've got is a negative image. Black areas are white, whites are black, light grey has become dark grey, and so on. However, after working with this for years, I got reasonably good at estimating what would make a good photo when it went through that second transition. But it was a lot of time and effort looking at the images which were in that in-between stage where they were all in the negative. The images had gone through the first transition, but not yet the second. It was hard to see the true image because they were in that in-between stage. And it got even trickier when it came to colour negatives. Although I was able to see the quality of an image in black and white, I was never able to see it in colour negatives. Some photographers could, but not me. There is something about people's faces being in various shades of green, which I just couldn't quite cope with. I could never picture the true colour when looking at colour negatives. It only became clear to me when they went through that second transition and the negative became a true colour positive image again. Now, that was just an illustration of the idea that we're in the in-between stage. Mankind went through the first transition when we disobeyed God, the original sin. That transition meant we broke the relationship with God and had to leave the garden. That transition means that we live in an intermediate stage, an in-between stage. What we're brought up to think of as real, the real world, is an in-between stage between Eden and heaven. In other words, we're living outside the garden, outside paradise, so we live in a sinful and a fallen world. Mankind has been through the first transition, so we're in a fallen state. But for God's people, there is a second transition to come, when we join God in heaven. The Bible has many illustrations of heaven, a mansion, a great hall, filled with people and angels praising God. There have been a few glimpses of heaven. And the big thing is that it's where God's people live united with him forever. So, we've not yet gone through that second transition. We're in an in-between state. And to take my illustration further, because we're in that in-between state, we don't see true colours. We've only got access to negative images. Because of that, it's hard to see things the way God does. It's like we're walking around seeing black things as white, or seeing everyone with green faces. That first transition, where mankind left the garden, it changed the way we see things. Think of what the serpent said in the garden. Genesis 3 verse 5. God said that because he knows that when you eat it, you will be like God and know what is good and what is bad. So what the serpent said there, of course it was a lie, but a subtle lie. It made claims that were not true. Mankind did not become like God. But there is a grain of truth in it. We did then know evil. We're now living in it. And our fall changed our perspective from how we used to see things in the garden. So our perspective, our vision, the way that we see things is important to everything about life. We must be able to see things right, to see the true colour. Think of how God tells Abraham to lift up his eyes. Genesis 13 verse 14. And the Lord said unto Abraham, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it, and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. I was quoting the King James Version there because of the phrase, lift up thine eyes. It's an important phrase to have flowing through our minds, especially when decisions are needed or when we're under pressure. Changing our perspective to a godly one really matters. Lifting up our eyes is important. There's many other examples of God wanting us to change how we see things. Think of Hagar, when she and her son were dying of thirst. Genesis 21:19. Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. So she went, filled the skin with water, and gave the boy a drink. That idea of lifting up our eyes is a strong one in the Bible. Too often we're looking around us at the things that surround us, or looking down at our feet. God wants us to lift up our eyes, to see things from his perspective, to see the true colours, not the view which the world has with its negative view, its wrong colours, black appearing white. Paul described how worldly people see things in the negative. Acts 28, verse 26. He said, "Go to this people and say, you will listen and listen, but never understand. You will look and look, but never see. For this people's minds have become stupid, and their ears can barely hear. And they have shut their eyes so that they may never see with their eyes, and listen with their ears, and understand with their heart, and turn and let me heal them." But for us, as Christians, we have a perspective, a viewpoint, which is so different. Ephesians 1 from verse 18. "Then, with the eyes of your hearts enlightened, you will know the confidence that is produced by having God called you. The rich glory that is his inheritance among the saints, and the unlimited greatness of his power for us who believe, according to the working of his mighty strength, which he brought about in the Messiah when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly realm. He is far above every ruler, authority, power, dominion, and every name that can be named, not only in the present age, but also in the one to come. God has put everything under the Messiah's feet and has made him the head of everything for the good of the church, which is his body, the fullness of the one who fills everything in every way." And see how that fundamental thing about this different perspective that we as Christians have is that we know God, we're in relationship with him. And so we see his authority because we know that everything has been put under the Messiah's feet. Our view of life is so very different. Because we know God's authority, we see things in a true light, a true colour. In all of the talk of Brexit that we've had over the last few years, did you see how much was made of the phrase sovereignty and all this take back control stuff? Let's not get into those arguments, but it's a good illustration of how our understanding of who has authority affects how we see the world. And because we know that it's God who has the ultimate authority, the ultimate sovereignty, we can lift our eyes and see things in a different light. As we think of the idea of humans currently not seeing things in a true light, there's another verse to throw in here. "Out of darkness into his marvellous light." Let's look at that whole section. 1 Peter 2, verse 9. "But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praise of him who hath called you out of darkness and into his marvellous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy." So think of that marvellous light. When we are God's people, we see things in God's marvellous light. We see his mercy, we view the world through the prism of God's mercy. We see his hand in everything. Part of that marvellous light is that it lets us see the true colour of things. God can reveal true blacks and whites to us. Part of seeing things right during this in-between state of negative images is knowing God's truth, not being misled into seeing false things as true. Another idea that springs to mind here is that of a runner running a race. His focus is purely on the winning line. 1 Corinthians 9:24. You know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one wins the prize, don't you? You must run in such a way that you may be victorious. Everyone who enters an athletic contest practices self-control in everything. They do it to win a wreath that withers away, but we run to win the prize that never fades. That's the way I run, with a clear goal in mind. That's the way I fight, not like someone shadow boxing. No, I keep on disciplining my body, making it serve me, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not somehow be disqualified. So another part of seeing things in their true light is keeping our focus on the prize, being disciplined in looking forward to that great day when we join the heavenly host. This thing about not seeing the true colour is especially important during times of opposition, when things get in the way of us doing God's will. The story of Job is important when we think of someone having a hard time. How did Job manage to see the true colour of God's glory when everything around him was going wrong? But let's see how God put limits on Satan's activity. Job 1 verse 12. Then the Lord told Satan, "Very well then, everything he owns is under your control, only you may not extend your hand against him." So Satan left the Lord's presence. Now I'm focusing on that phrase, "you may not." God's simple and precise control over what he will permit. This allows us to see where true authority lies. When living in negative times, we give the devil too much credence. We can see everything as an attack from the enemy. Once again, our perspective matters here. If we're viewing things with God's authority as the centre point, then we can easily create the picture of God saying to Satan, "You may not." That is the true colour, the true light to see any attack of the enemy. Let's not dwell too much on what evil is happening. Let's realise that God permits it, for reasons that are way beyond anything we can understand. And let's trust God's reason and judgment. With that perspective of God putting limits on man and Satan's evil, we can focus on the race which is set before us. We get less focused on protesting the evils in the world, more focused on active, realistic loving of our fellow man. By lifting our eyes, we can rejoice more in God's great work and live our lives more like Jesus. I think this idea of keeping our eyes lifted up to see God's perspective, God's true image, is at the heart of a lot of what Jesus taught us. For example, when the Pharisees tried to tie him into a big political debate, he taught us to take God's perspective on it. Should we pay our taxes? That was the question put to him. Give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, give unto God what is God. Isn't that a great way of telling us to realise how limited our view of life is? If we're more concerned with money in politics than if we lift our eyes and see God's hand in everything. So, to go back to the process of photography, let's realise that the reason it had to be a two-transition process, positive to negative, then negative to positive, was because of the limitations of the chemistry. Let's beware of the fact that There are limitations all around us, and we live in a world which is the best that mankind can make when surrounded by limitations. But God is without limits. Because God is without limits, his view on things is very different from ours. When we live in this time of false colours, of negative images, God only ever sees and knows the true colour. He sees the big picture. And let's rejoice that paradise, whether portrayed as the Garden of Eden or the celestial city, is without limits. Our relationship with the Almighty God is without limits. God will do as he will do. Nothing can stop him. And because he is all-loving, we can rely on him 100%. So, to wrap up, let me encourage you to keep in your focus this second transition which is coming. That's when all of God's people join him in his paradise. Spend time picturing what that will be like. Do you see it as a Garden of Eden or the celestial city or the assembly of the ages? So many wonderful images of heaven to concentrate on. Let's constantly be aware that much of what we see and understand today is because we're living in a time of negative images. We're not seeing the true colour. Ask God to begin to reveal true colours on the things around you. Ask him to lift up your eyes and call you out of darkness into his marvellous light. God's people truly are strangers in a foreign land. Let's recognise that and rejoice that he is leading us home. That's it for this week, so take care, folks, and hope to see you soon. Bye.